welcome to the second episode of Hoofprints, the official podcast of Scapegoat Publishing. I'm Kevin I. Slaughter, sitting here in my office, chain smoking and feverishly editing an hour and a half long conversation with Jim Goad down to something reasonable for people to download and listen to. I still think with this intro and the music that we've included in this podcast, a mixture of songs by Jim Goad and by other people, it's still going to be about 45 minutes. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Jim Goad, I really don't know how you came by this podcast, but assuming there may be one or two of you that have never heard of the man before that would in turn be listening to this show, he is the author of a number of books, most notably world-renowned Answer Me, the first three, published by Scapegoat Publishing, your very own. Actually, technically, originally, it was a magazine that was published by Jim Goad in the early 90s. And then a compilation of the first three issues was published by AK Press in 1994. Scapegoat Publishing published our expanded and supersized edition in 2006. He is also the author of The Redneck Manifesto that was published by Simon & Schuster in 1997. Ship Magnet, One Man's Miraculous Ability to Absorb the World's Guilt, that was published by Feral House in 2002. A CD, Truck Drivin' Psycho, which we will be playing a few excerpts from in the middle of the interview. And wrote a comic book called Trucker Fags in Denial. The artist Jim Blanchard did the illustrations for it, and it was published by Fantagraphics Books. Most recently, Jim Goad released Jim Goad's Gigantic Book of Sex. That was published by Feral House this year. Along with all of that, and Boiled Peanuts, which you'll hear about in the interview, he is about to go on tour with Hank the Third. He and the Power of County Band are going to be opening up for Hank the Third and Ass Jack, Hank's side project band. They'll be... Their tour starts in Memphis, Tennessee on July 8th at the High Tone and ends on August 12th at the Vogue in Indianapolis, Indiana. In between those dates is 25 shows. They'll be stopping from at Little Rock, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Austin, Houston, Corpus Christi, Fort Worth, Albuquerque, Tempe, San Diego, West Hollywood, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Boise, Englewood, Lincoln, Springfield, Kansas City, Cedar Rapids, Minneapolis, Mokena, Sturgeon Bay, Madison, and Saugat, Illinois. If you heard your town's name in that list, you might want to go and check them out. You can find all the dates on Jim Goad's musical MySpace page, www.myspace.com/JimBigRedGoad. I'm pretty sure you can find all of that information on Hank the Third's website, and I believe that's Hank3.com. And there you go. Without any further ado, as per request by Jim Goad, we're going to hear a little Ike Turner and then go right into the interview. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Okay, so as of right now, we are recording. I know I was supposed to
for legal reasons.
For legal reasons, I had to inform you at least.
You not trust me?
Kevin? So,
have I ever done anything to betray your trust, Kevin?
Well, nothing I wanted to bring up in conversation. I didn't want
to
sour.
I
didn't want to sour the strained.
Like legal warning, like reading the Riot Act. I don't know. It's a little hostile and aggressive.
Well, I was going to do. I wanted to do a hostile interview with you. I don't think enough people have taken you to task.
Yeah, that's true. I've had a smooth sailing. It's been a breeze for me.
Yeah. So.
Boring public.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much sycophants, ass kissers. That's all you seem to get, Jim.
And now I'm Atlanta's favorite white person for the blacks.
Has it been official? Has it been made official yet?
I lead them through the streets, Kevin, the Pied Piper.
Wow.
They understand me in a way that others, I don't think, have until this point in my life.
So the local black population, they're fans of you.
Embraced. Oh, wow, can we get this music concrete out here? We got the actual ATL sirens. Do you hear this?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. All right. We got urban unrest here down in the ATL.
Well, when I moved to Baltimore, I referred to it, I initially referred to it as the city of accidents, but then...
Baltimore?
Yeah, Baltimore. And then I had to fine-tune that because I realized most of the events that the police or ambulances were responding to weren't accidents per se, so I changed that slogan to City of Incidents, and that way it was kind of neutral as to the cause. Your opening song that you were prepared to sing, I'm not a white boy. Can you tell me about this song?
It's called I'm a White Boy. It's by Merle Haggard.
I am a white boy.
Yeah, I'm a white boy. Not I am. Contraction.
Contraction, yes.
And I don't know. I think it's kind of benign, but it's radical, I guess, to even say that at this point. I mean, the crowd's going to be almost entirely white. And this is, I guess, I'm not sure if it's been clarified, but for a month I'm going on tour as the opening act for Hank 3.
Yes.
Singing country songs. And I want to do I'm a White Boy by Merle Haggard. And I'm trying to think like the most incendiary line. Okay, he says he's not black and he's not yellow. And then something about he doesn't want no handout, live-in, or part of anything they're given. Okay, maybe that's implying that blacks want handouts or something. Maybe that's a little racist. But Jesus, you know, here's the thing. I went to prison for domestic violence. We're doing a dozen songs where the guy, chops up his girlfriend because the bitch was cheating on him. That's all cool. Nobody's offended. You know, I've never committed a hate crime, never encouraged an alleged hate crime. But, you know, I can't do a fucking song where I say I don't want a handout and I'm white. Doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
Well, it's the band. It's the band that you're playing with that doesn't want to do the song.
Right. Well, the way I had intended, I guess the intro music that you played, Ike Turner's The Rooster. I wanted to start off with an Ike Turner instrumental that's very violent sounding. We walk out, stomp out on the stage to that. Then we launch into I'm a White Boy by Merle Haggard.
So you're going to be going out on tour.
Kevin lapses into.
So you're going to be going out on tour. Tell us about that.
Tell us about that.
Five weeks and 27 shows right now.
27 shows in 5 weeks.
Yeah, and we will have 2 days of practice before the tour starts and one live show before we actually go on the tour opening for Hack 3. So that's a little daunting, especially if you haven't done this sort of shit before like I haven't. But I don't know, it's like Fear Factor or something. Or something George Clinton used to do in the 60s, like when he joined the Detroit Lions and got his ass beat.
I will admit you completely lost me on that reference.
Okay. All right.
Oh, completely
Paper
over my
Lion.
Head.
Paper Lion was a novel. I think it was turned into a movie with Alan Alda as George Clinton. George Clinton was a writer who was like this skinny Yale type of guy who decided to join the Detroit Lions. You know, nearly got his skull dislocated.
Wow.
Played like one play in the NFL. That's what it seems like. I'm not known as a singer, but I can sing, and it's going to confuse people. I'm going to fucking just come out and start yelling at them. But kind of like fucking with their head. I mean, the thing I've worked on the most is just the voice and getting the notes right.
The voice, the million-dollar voice.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you have a nickname for yourself? I mean, besides,
I'm
I guess you have... Your
the
truck
Nashville
driving
cat.
Site. The Nashville cat.
No.
That would be, that would be great.
Into a hat of stupid, you know, we're the Dry County Rebels.
Yeah. Well, I guess you are Big Red Goad.
It's Big Red Goad because that was the name of the CD that I did 10 years ago where it was just all covers of trucker songs. Because
yeah.
all these guys, it was Red Simpson, Red Sovine, Red Foley.
Mm.
Everybody's name Red.
You're trying to milk that former glory of the Big Red Goad days.
Yeah, what, yeah, I'm massaging the prostates of Dave Dudley and Dick Curlis and Red Simpson and Red Sovine and milking their seminal glands. Yeah.
Which I know Brian Clark would want me to say is has been recently re-released on Discriminant Audio.
Ah, nice plug there. Yeah, yeah. You can buy the CD, 14 songs for like $10.
Yeah.
I never had no cash. Everybody calls me poor white trash. Lived in the swamp all my days. Fished in the bayou for my pay. Well, the company man, he came my way. Company man stole my gal away. Well, the poor white trash, not a nickel in my jeans. Poor white trash, don't know what love means. Poor white trash never had no fun. Poor white trash ain't got no one. In the swamps I live, in the swamps I'll die. For poor white trash, no one will cry. Not a nickel in my jeans. Poor white trash, don't know what love means. Poor white trash, never had no fun. Poor white trash, ain't got no one. In the swamps I live, in the swamps I'll die. For poor white trash, no one will cry. No
There's a man named Raymond who I mistakenly called Peter a couple times that makes boiled peanuts, and we may go into a musical combo with him called the Boiled Peanuts with a Z. We'll compete for the little slice of that interracial hip-hop market that the Black Eyed Peas have cornered.
It's a expanding market. It's expanding market, and now
I'm bursting out on all different angles here, Kevin.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm an enigma.
An enigma wrapped in a mystery, stuffed into
a wife beater. Wearing a medium Fruit of the Loom wife beater.
I don't know. What else do you want to talk about?
I don't know. The book you published? What a gorgeous, lavish. It feels so good. It smells so good. It's so hefty. You could beat somebody to death with that 368-page reprint of Answer Me, Kevin.
It is a truncheon of a book.
It's a Concordia? Is that a word? It's a compendium.
Concordance? Concordance sounds like a religious term. I don't know.
Concordance is like, isn't that like the handbook to the Bible?
I guess. I don't know.
Protestant out of Concordance. But it collects the first three issues of Legendary magazine. This is not a fucking zine. I hate zines.
Oh,
yeah, the first three, not the rape issue. The rape issue is available separately.
The rape issue is available separately, and
plus 60 pages of other writing that I've done since getting out of the pokey, including Judge Orders Hitler to Undergo Therapy. What the hell else is in there? Picking a piece of heaven in your mouth,
and to reference back to our introductory song.
Ah, I feel your pain, Ike Turner.
Yeah. Was that your initial wanting to write it about Ike Turner? Is that when you discovered his amazing musical ability?
After the Ike Turner show at the Portland Waterfront Blues Festival, that's kind of hard to Waterfront Blues Festival.
you should probably talk to him about that. You should probably have him rename it. So that in future interviews you can it'll come off a little easier.
Roll off the tip of my tongue. The Portland Waterfront Blues Festival. He played, and afterwards he's in his spangly MC Hammer looking purple rhinestone outfit, and I went up to him to get an autograph. And the little man was like 5'2" and had one of the sweetest smiles I'd ever seen in my life. And it got me to thinking, you know what? Just judged on based on her live performances, that Tina Turner's a little bit of a Hellcat and a firecracker. I mean, I could see her scratching him up. She admitted to it as much. And I realized, you know, Tina's music post-Ike, she sold millions, got Grammys, but it blew. When he was beating her, she did the best music of her life. And I think at this point, you know, Ike's been more through more than Tina has.
Certainly.
So I connected with him on a very deep emotional level, which he was entirely unaware of as I stood there staring at him.
Answer me the first three. The Scapegoat Publishing edition has a Hebrew character with a trophy wife on the cover.
He does. Yeah, it does. He's like he just screams Jew. He pulsates Jew.
Along with a cast of other stereotypical characters.
Hollywood types. Yeah, Hollywood was just this dystopian futuristic miasma that we found ourselves in, that we produced Answer Me in. So I just wanted a street scene and had Nick Dugas, who lived in that area for about 20 years, capture it, which I think he did really well. Okay, I'm walking in front of my bay window in my underwear, and there's a gay man looking at me. Simultaneously ashamed and aroused. Come on, Doc, quit barking.
And there's a punk rock flyer on a wall that a homeless man is urinating on with a band called Felcher listed.
What are they called?
Felcher?
Felcher. Is that a band?
It's on the cover of Answer Me, the first three.
No, Nick, that's all Nick's doing.
Yeah. do you think that's appropriate to have the word Felcher on the cover of your book?
Sure. I think it's more than, to have God's giant finger flipping off the world, to have disease-ridden, lice-ridden, amoral, violent, sociopathic characters, dotting the streets of Hollywood. Yeah, it's all appropriate.
Yeah, no, all that I'm fine with. But Felcher.
The Felching. I'm always,
I'm against that.
Where people draw the line. Like, there were Mexican guys in the joint who would say that you can fuck a guy in the ass as long as you don't come.
If you really? Come, you're back.
Where do you come up with these arbitrary? Okay, all right.
I thought it was just if you didn't kiss. So, I might have to go and revise some.
Kissing makes them very affectionate and female. Isn't that the truth? They're just doubling their manliness by introducing two penises into the picture.
I don't know, that's disturbing. That's disturbing that ejaculate. See, I would think that ejaculation is the point, is it not? I mean,
of a male
seeking sexual gratification.
I think it would be actually
feminine to worry about not coming just so that you can have the physical closeness of another human being. That would seem more fulfilling to a woman than a man, because, a lot...
Oh, yeah, women, women are all soft, and the perfume, and all emotional. They turn you into a faggot.
Yeah, well, so I disagree with the Mexicans in the joint who say that you're only gay if you come in another man, or on another man, while you're having
sex with them. Once an erection has been achieved, once it moves... Once it starts to swell, once tumescence begins, you cross the magical rainbow bridge.
Yeah, I think once that erection comes into some sort of contact in a sexual way with another male, then that's pretty gay. It's pretty homosexual.
Okay, not that I'm arguing with that premise. What about all these chicks who are making out and licking each other's vaginas? Because nothing gives me more pleasure than say, that's okay. Yeah, you're a lesbian now.
Well, but I hope...
They freak the hell out. I'm not gay. I'm not bi. Yeah. I just like licking women's vaginas and bobbling their boobs in my mouth.
Well, I guess there's a couple of different takes. If, if it's done purely for the sexual arousal of a male, then it's just a woman's, it's a continuation of a woman's innate want to, for exhibitionism. And they, and actually I believe it tunes into a man's.
Why is this arousing for males though? It's like, I don't, you know, hey honey, I'm going to bring the postman over. We're going to blow each other in front of you. How's that? Is that going to get you lubed up, baby?
Well, that's, that is assuming,
that,
but that's assuming that males and males and females are the same and have the same sexual instinct. I think the very fact that they're different, that women tend to be more exhibitionistic and males voyeuristic, then that's what differentiates the two. Women, a woman making out with another woman to sexually excite a voyeuristic male is just understanding of his voyeurism, whereas if a man was blowing another man, it's not really going to do anything to attract a female viewer, unless she's just more deviant than your average. And I'm talking about objective statistics.
Gives me a headache. It annoys me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like to shame women.
Yeah.
Who have any hint of a lesbian past.
Well, we have to have our hobbies.
You figuring out, Kevin? Chicks?
Chicks? No, no. I have absolutely. I married one because she's a wonderful girl and cleans the house and makes dinner.
Yeah.
And that's and after that, I figured I don't have to deal with other completely crazy. She seems to be less crazy and less annoying ways than just about any other woman I've come into contact with. So I kind
of. So many of them tend to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think, you know, fundamentally they're pretty simple creatures and pretty transparent. It's just that I don't want to believe that they are what they seem to be.
Have you ever seen Hank the Third live?
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Was he playing his, is on the tour that you're doing, is he going to have both his country band and his punk rock band? Is it actually the same band, or?
I think it's the same band minus his fiddler and steel guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
And then they do, like, metal for 45 minutes. Yeah, Ass Jack will be on this tour as well.
Ass Jack.
And Big Red Goad, back with Power of County, will be the opener. Power of County is a Portland country band, and every promoter from here to Timbuktu has fucked their name up. Most of them have Power of Country, but I've also seen Power Company.
Power Company.
And Dynamism of County. They got the county right.
Dynamism of County?
Dynamism of County. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's like somebody went put the name
like
through.
Fish, like, translated it and then translated it back.
You beat me to it.
Yeah.
Which is actually a lot of fun.
So we will be new people playing old country music and making it hopefully somewhat new and fresh again.
Well, that's amazing.
And I think people will be startled that I can actually hold a tune. That'll be the biggest accomplishment. Now I can sing. It may be reprehensible, loathsome. Maybe it'd be better if society didn't have people like this, but yeah, I can hold a tune. I can carry a tune.
Well, there's a quote from H.L. Mencken that I've always really held on to. It's from his book, In Defense of Women, which I know you're quite sympathetic toward.
Yeah.
And it says, I hope I need not confess that a large part of my stock in trade consists of platitudes rescued from the cobweb shelves of yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And there we go. Some of the greatest works have already been written. But they've been forgotten.
Well, what we're doing is we're going into the catacombs and we're opening up the vaults and we're dusting off the giant testicles of Dave Dudley and Red Sovine and Dick Curless and all the rest of them. Dick Curless has the deepest fucking voice I've ever heard on a white man. And you know what's even cooler, Kevin?
What's
that? He'd wear an eye patch. He would wear an eye patch.
Wow.
Yeah, this real, like, gigantic bald voice with an eye patch. Well, he might be the toughest white guy ever.
Boston to St. Louis. roll on big wheels. Don't you roll so slow. Big Ann is waiting in Memphis, and Betty Lou in Maine. I got a good old gal in Knoxville, but man, I forgot her name. But not her figure, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I'm a kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, truck driving son of a gun. Well, there goes Joe, flying low, picking up his time. But from where I sit, I don't believe you'd say I'm wasting mine. I'm moving faster than Jimmy Eight. And if you think I'm losing time, you're running late. I got a steady little baby waiting back home for me. But there are six more towns to go till I'm back in Tennessee. And six more women, at least I know. Yeah, I'm a kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, truck driving son of a gun.
Among the Beaumont Club and Knickerbockers and the Gothic Theater, you will be doing a show at Dante's in Portland on July 27th. Now, yes, you have a history with Dante's, don't you?
I used to work as a bouncer there. I worked in the porno magazine, still work for the porno magazine that used to be right above Dante's. Friends with the guy who owns it. One of the net jerks is the co-owner, DP, the Asian doctor. And more of a history, I think what you're alluding to is my joyous, documented history of encounters and altercations with anti-racist skinheads in Portland.
I think so.
That may have been because we were going to play another club, and I think the entire security staff there is basically guys from that gang. But they got it in their minds that I'm a Nazi, and... I guess not really caring much about, you know, diversity of opinion, they decided I should be exterminated because of that.
Well, the best way, so I've come to understand it from popular culture today, the best way to promote diversity of opinion is to limit it to the opinions that only promote diversity of opinion.
Right. Yeah, well, they're not in their own way, they're kind of intolerant, and that's why I'd give the edge to the Nazis, just because the Nazis admit they're Nazis. Nothing I hate more than double standards and hypocrisy and idiots acting like Nazis in the name of fighting Nazis. But it should be an interesting show. I've got all sorts of history with Portland, and it'll be joyous coming back there and, you know, performing in front of all these little fucking wannabe greaser bands who can't even get gigs in Portland. It's like, hey, assholes. I'm a writer, not even a musician. I got a gig, fuck you. I'm just rubbing it in their faces, being a dick about it.
Well, hopefully they'll be able to hear this broadcast and attend, and maybe they can protest.
No, they have shut down shows before. They shut down a non-show at that Burbadi's Club.
Boyd.
I guess Boyd got paid for it, but didn't perform the local, what is it like? Coalition for Humanity or something. You know, it's one of these really vague, you know, how could you, what are you, you're against humanity?
They actually, in their propaganda flyers, they used something that I had designed for a Boyd Rice show in New York, when they were trying to shut down the Portland show, which was mixed for me, because it was nice to see my work being getting out into the world, but then again, it was used to actually shut down the show of the musician that I was trying to promote in the first place.
Is this just legend, the mafia, if they were going to hit somebody or they were warning somebody, they'd put like a black hand on their window? What if these people like put a rainbow sticker on your car or something? Like you've been visited by the Coalition for Human Dignity. Next time will be a business call.
an equality sticker.
Yeah, we're gonna pound some fucking equality into your head.
Nice. They're actually in Atlanta. There is a pretty infamous strip club. Fuck.
Magic City, the black one.
No, I think it's
the Claremont.
The Claremont.
70-year-old women. Yeah, that's where the strippers go to die. And it's a hipster place, and everybody does coke in the bathroom, and they do alternative karaoke on Tuesday nights. But yeah, it's an old Fleabag motel above ground, and like in the basement, the back alleyway, there's a really decrepit strip club that hipsters hang out at. I took a picture of a woman's vagina on Ponce de Leon, which is what the Claremont Club is on, yesterday. There was this fat white woman, I don't know, in her 40s, sitting there, and 40, 50 feet across the road, as I zoomed by, I could see that she was sitting there, spread-eagled, with her flappy vagina hanging out. So I popped a Uber and pulled around, and we pulled up and snapped a couple photos and plopped it up on my website. Yeah, just sitting there letting her vagina flap in the breeze.
So she had it exposed before you
yeah.
came along?
No, unfortunately it wasn't just the stunning sight of me oozing raw male sensuality that caused her to pop open the vagina. It was there before I came along.
Oh, okay. So that's you, I mean, because that I understand that is usually the female reaction to the presence. The
instant, uncontrolled, embarrassing lubrication. Yeah. Except, like, obvious, like, clothes staining lubrication. Uncontrolled, yeah, over lubrication. Even, you know, sometimes, like, accompanied by audible sounds.
One of the things you were hoping to accomplish in Atlanta is researching one of your current book projects, if I'm not mistaken.
The Encyclopedia of Race.
The Encyclopedia of Race. Now, from what I understand, that's a touchy subject.
Yeah, these days people are a little uptight about race. Can't really approach it with anything except sanctimony and egalitarian goodwill.
So
of course, you know, that's, I just saw, like, you've seen the original movie, The Producers.
Yes.
Like, to me, the most perfect comedy ever made. And I just, like, rented the DVD, and there's a bonus DVD where they had Mel Brooks talking about doing it. And, you know, having Springtime for Hitler back in 68 and still barely 20 years after World War II ended was just so radical. Mel Brooks, who I love, he said something about, you know, well, it's my philosophy, ring the bell. You walk up to the bell, you got to ring it. Ring the bell. So, you know, there's a giant bell there called race. I got to go up and ring that fucking bell.
So as a humanitarian effort, you're going to be putting together this kind of primer on race and how
race
the races can...
And racial stereotyping, and hopefully, you know, I guess in some ways I have an agenda. I think that I'll be able to pretty much prove, as much as it can be proven, that equality is a myth, and that there are demonstrable differences between people, that race exists. I mean, that's still the mind-blowing one, this idea that it's just a social construct. Of course it's a social construct, but, you know, so is the idea of dinner. People still eat dinner. You know.
Well, yeah.
And I think, yeah, the people aren't equal, yet they are equal in that they're all ethnocentric, and they all are somewhat supremacist about their own kind. I don't know if it was Rushden or one of those guys that theorized that, you know, biologically people tend to care for and nurture people that look like themselves more than animals that don't look like themselves.
You're talking about Philip J. Rushden? I believe
it was Rushden, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why is that such a heresy? Makes sense. You know, people have these tribal instincts, just like they have sexual instincts, and if you suppress them for too long, it's going to come out in all sorts of warped and weird ways. You know, these sharp skinheads, what a weird mangling of identity and identity politics. And it's the same instinct. They just subvert it, invert it. So, yeah, and it's, I mean, more than anything, you really can't talk about it. Like, we started this interview, but if I can't even find a band that wants to play a song called I'm a White Boy. Is that such a, I mean, I'm not white? You know, put me in prison, I think the non-whites would think I'm white. Why is that such a,
well,
a radical statement?
Prisons by necessity now are racially segregated.
Yeah, and not by the design of the wardens. That's
No. Against the wishes of the state, really. I believe it was the California prison system where they wanted to just kind of permanently racially segregate the prisons so that they could have a significant reduction in racially motivated gang crime.
So that's what always amuses me, is you could break it down until all there's left is Bosnians in the world,
mm-hmm.
and the Bosnians would find a way to fucking split up and hate each other and kill each other.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But to the extent, but then a homogeneous society, much less violent. You don't see it, you don't see the level of violence, say, in the Amish community as you do in Los Angeles, which is, if I'm not mistaken, the most diverse city in the United States.
Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say probably is.
Yeah.
With a very low quotient of blacks for a major American city.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all the ruckus they raise, all those riots they keep doing out there, yeah, it's like 7% black.
Should we do some sort of kind of wrap-up segment? Is there something clever that you can think of?
No, I'm drawing blanks. No.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Goad, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for talking with us here on Hoofprints, the official podcast. Sorry.
Hoofprints.
Hello, this
is Jim Goad, and you're listening to Hoofprints.
There we go. I'm going to run that.
Publishing.com. Hello. This is Jim Goad. You're listening to Hoofprints on the Scapegoat Network.
Every single fucking show. All right,
fantastic.
Jim.
I'll talk to you later, bro.
Talk to you later.
Stackley, he was a gambling man, as everybody ought to know. Stackley got a Stetson hat and a blazing 44.
I was hanging round the levee along about the break of day, when I hear two gentlemen arguing. I listen to the words they say. It was Stackley and Billy a gambling awful late. Stackley, he throwed a 7, and Billy said he throwed an 8. Stackley, he looked at Billy, said you can't get away with that. Tain't enough you win my money, but you win my lucky studs and hat. Stackley run home to his woman, said fetch me my 44. Gonna fix old Billy's wagon so he don't gamble wrong no more.
Stackley, he was a gambling man, as everybody ought to know. Stackley got a Stetson hat and a blazing 44.
Stackley found poor Billy. Billy pleaded for his life. Have some mercy on my children, have mercy on my darling wife. Stackley shot poor old Billy, he plucked him in the side. Then he kept on pumping bullets till poor old Billy died. Well, they caught old Stack next morning, they strung him up a tree. And the women dressed in mourning and cried for Stackley. Had a $100 funeral with preaching Parson Brown. Then the undertaker got him and stuck him in the ground.
Stackley, he was a gambling man, as everybody ought to know. Stackley got a Stetson hat and a blazing 44.
See Stack coming, he holler, now listen to me. Hide the children and the money, cause Stackley is worse than me. Stackley grabbed hold of the devil and threw him up on the shelf. Said your working days are over, I'm gonna run the place myself.
Stackley, he was a gambling man, as everybody ought to know. Stackley got a Stetson hat
and a blazing 44.
Stackley,